Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. 25-year veteran Fidelity portfolio manager Max Lemieux joins us today. For Canadian investors, Max manages Fidelity True North Fund. Today, he shares with host Pamela Ritchie his current outlook on investing in Canadian equities and how he continues to diversify his portfolio for the future. Max believes that based on where interest rates are, the market is not overvalued. Max also explains that at some point, a sense of normalcy will prevail in society, and he thinks that it is hard to see inflation persist in the long term, given current headwinds like demographics. Today's podcast was recorded on February 10th, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Well, hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects. I'm Pamela Ritchie. Year to date, the S&P/TSX capped composite index is up roughly 5.5%. And with two-thirds of this index being tied to sectors which many characterize as cyclicals, financials, materials, industrials, and energy, many investors wonder, is the relatively strong performance so far a signal to go big on Canada? The bulls believe that it is, as the economy will be boosted by the vaccine, pent-up global demand, and the narrowing in the output gap. So what is the outlook for the Canadian economy and markets, according to a seasoned investor who runs one of the largest Canadian equity funds with a strong long-term track record? Max Lemieux joins us today. He is manager of the Fidelity True North Fund. He's here to share his views and updates on his fund and investment thoughts. Max, welcome. Great to see you again.
Good morning. Pleasure to be with you this morning.
I'm going to jump right in here, Max, and ask you about the similarities and the differences between what we're seeing in markets right now and roughly the 2000 period, 99-2000 period.
It's really important to discuss this because it's starting to get really frothy. Last time we spoke, it was already getting there, but it's gotten a little bit bigger or a bit more out of control in some sectors. I want people to understand that the overall index, the overall market is not necessarily overvalued based on where long-term interest rate stands and dividend yield, et cetera. But there's certain similarities to 99-2000. And I just want to say briefly, I'll start with what is different, and then we'll talk about what's similar. But what was different, that 99-2000, we were really near the end of a 10-year economic cycle. It was supposed to end in 1998. There was a long-term capital crash and the Asian flu crisis, and the Fed lowered and reset interest rates at a very low level. And then we had a 2-3 extra years combined with the tech emerging internet, cell phones, laptop, et cetera, mobility. So it was kind of a new era in the tech world. And every time there's something new and that speculators or investors or a small investor can get more important in the marketplace, that's when you see those bubble getting triggered. And so that's one thing, end of a business cycle, whereas today we're really at the beginning of a, you know, it's we don't know if there could be a setback in this recovery, but we can assume that we're likely to see a new business cycle as we speak. The other thing is liquidity. Back in 99-2000, following the reset in rates in 98, we saw long-term rates starting to increase. And that what created the crack in the tech bubble and the market in general in 2000, 2001, was basically the telephone companies, if you remember, were buying all this gear to grow the capacity of their internet networks and telecom networks. And sometimes they had to double or triple order some of these gears because there was scarcity from the suppliers like the Nortel of the world, Cisco, et cetera. So what happened, the credit agencies this basically realized that the phone companies had too much leverage. So they had to control their free cash flow again, and they had to cut back on CapEx. And that's what happened. That's how that was the crack where you saw the house of cards falling apart. And it snowballed into other sectors. And then 2001, there was the unfortunately the sad event in New York City, September 11. But then we saw this new super cycle in Chinese demand for all the commodities. And that was the go-go years of between 2002 and 2008 with the housing market. So, but that's very important. Like interest rates now are rock bottom, whereas in 2000, they were at their peak. And then there was a reset in 2001.
Right. I just wanted to, yeah, you circled right back to it. The crack was the fact that they were already 2 years in on rising interest rates, which is really different.
Exactly. And then, of course, all the similarities we know. Remember this stat, the small investors today represent about 22% of the volume or the activity in the U.S. Stock market. That's exactly where it were in year 2000. The level of presence of the investors that are under age of 35 years old, it's a new high, a new record. When you think about these Robinhood type of accounts where there's no commission to pay, the number of people that buy call options and without necessarily understanding what is a call or a put option, it's like a lottery ticket. And people have more free time. There's a lockdown. They're staying home. So hopefully, I think what will make this change or put a halt to it will be probably slightly higher rates. We can talk about inflation risk and later today, but also people going back to work, people going back to school. I think that's what's going to happen. And it doesn't mean that the broad index will fall apart. You know, if there's an economic recovery and it holds, we should be okay. But then it's all about stock picking and making sure that you avoid those more speculative companies that have a risky business model, that don't have a smart management team, or that don't have a good balance sheet.
So let's get into the stock picking in just a minute. But so you've given a great sense of sort of sentiment and comparisons, but maybe also as a comparison or just generally, when you look out to the innovation that is out there right now and to really to the opportunities right now, is it a, I don't know if you're invested in all of it, but is it a broad landscape right now?
Listen, the technology companies that we see today, first of all, some of these names are hybrids, right? Some of them are clean technology. It's related to the environmental transition that is about to take place. I mean, already taking place. But if you see the money that will be spent by the Western world on changing the grid, the electricity grid, the type of energies that's going to be from more solar, more wind, this is happening at the expense of fossil fuel. And this will have a long duration. So I find that it's very, in some ways, very different from 99 2000 because once you've bought this new cell phone in 2000, you were good for 2-3 years. This energy transition has a long way to go because those are massive projects. And then the whole digitalization architecture that is changing for, you'd be surprised. Some of these large Fortune 5,000 companies, like they're not 500, sorry, they're not necessarily up to date. You know, we're talking to some of our companies that we own. You know, we're talking to our companies on a daily basis. We're working around the clock. Seriously, I'm so proud of our research team. It's been phenomenal. But the reality, like the IT firms that some of these companies that we own, they told us, like some of those large cap names were not ready for this pandemic and they have to spend the money now. They have no choice. And some companies already talking about, well, this transition is already part of the past. You have to think about what's the next big thing. So I think there's, as you said, there's a broad set of subsectors that we can touch on, productivity enhancement from software companies that have a SaaS model. You know, there's gears, there's software, there's AI. So there's a lot. And I think that, top it off, you have a strong foundation. When you think about Google, Facebook, Amazon, these companies now, they're still growing 15 to 25% a year. I mean, think of Microsoft, and they're not necessarily overvalued. I mean, so compared to 2000, where you had a lot of companies trading at whatever, 20 times sales, these days, you've got a solid foundation of companies that have a very astute business model. And even if we go into a downturn, we've seen it last year, these companies continue to grow earnings. So it's really phenomenal what we've seen and what I think we will continue to see. But we have to be shrewd investors and be on the lookout to make sure that we choose the companies that have the best business model.
What does the Canadian consumer not know that they want and need, but that they want and need and can afford? I mean, I want to kind of get a sense of the Canadian consumer, how you view the health, but also where they want to go. Where does the Canadian consumer want to go? What direction? What's going to delight them?
Listen, I think in Canada, first of all, there's a renewal in the marketplace and there's a lot of new IPOs. So I think it's really exciting for the next couple of years, because for us, if you think about the past 25 years, the number of listing in the Western world has been declining, I think, to the tune of 40% cumulative. And now we're adding new names. Of course, there's M&A, there are takeovers, but really there's a net positive to find these new names. Maybe they're overvalued in the short term. Doesn't mean that we're buying or participating in all these IPOs, but we're in there. We have to analyze them, and there'll be a broader list of names in which we can invest and should help us to generate more alpha in this upcoming cycle. But to come back to the consumer, I think it's super exciting because savings rate, I mean, the reality, this crisis has been very dramatic, but it's been a lot more impactful to the service industry. And I'm talking about tourism, restaurants, hotels, transportation. But when you think about other type of jobs, it's a lot of people have just been working from home or working from their office, wherever it is, and they've been saving money because we can't travel. So I think there's pent-up demand being built, and that's why there's room in a diversified portfolio to own stocks that will benefit from the reopening of the economy. Something to be mindful, though, is that vaccination rate, it's not the same everywhere in the world. I think in Canada, unfortunately, we're in a tough spot where we're lagging. So I'm not so sure that the expectation for the second half of this year will be met. You have to be careful about what you read from the sell side research from the street. I think some of these forecasts are maybe a little bit too optimistic on some names or some sectors. And therefore, again, it's all about stock picking and making sure that as you know, you've seen what I own in True North over these past 10 years. There are a lot of names that I've owned for the long term, sometimes names that I've held in previous portfolios for, you know, 20 years. So if you have a good business model, sometimes it does not necessarily really matter what happened to your domestic economy. But the reality, there is pent-up demand building for all sort of services.
Okay, well, let's lean into that a little bit. And so I'm noticing if I flip through a newspaper or, you know, ads online, lots of local cruises, so-called. I grew up in the summers going to the St. Lawrence River in Ontario, and lots of tours being advertised. They're up and down the St. Lawrence, you know, overnight. You know, probably you can control it because it's a ship, and maybe you can't control flying off to Italy, but you can control it on a local. But you wonder if, because that's what we'll be able to do, does the inflation, to kind of back into the inflation discussion, does the inflation on some of these things go flying? How do you look at that? Do you take part in it and worry about the inflation?
Yeah. Well, to add to your comment about the pent-up demand for all these services and vacation and cruises, whatever it might be, maybe you'll get discounts on or increases in prices for Virgin tickets to go to the moon. I don't know. But listen, the reality, not only that, you've got almost 0% interest rates on these financings to buy a snowmobile or a Sea-Doo or all kind of watercrafts and or a new car. Like, and it's happening now. So for those big ticket items, there was pent-up demand. It's happening now, and there might be more. And it's possible also that even if you can fly and you've got the vaccine, there could be also a tranche of the population, the more, I don't know, 65 plus years old, the people that used to travel a lot because they were retirees. Maybe they'll be a little bit more careful. And I think a lot of people bought cottages. I've seen crazy prices around Montreal, like Eastern Townships or Mont-Tremblant. Like, I'm sure it's the same in Toronto. in the Lakes region. But I think that this is ongoing. And I think that people will be less sensitive to what they have to pay. I do agree with you on that. And for sure, it might bring some inflation, but you have to break down how the CPI is measured. And in the US, for instance, about a third of the CPI is related to housing, but it's a question that you're being asked. What price, what kind of rent do you think you would get if you were leasing your home? And therefore, this is very interesting because despite the fact that on so many ticket items, we might see a price increase, which might be short-term, transient, you know, for the next 2 years, possible. It doesn't mean that it's going to be fully captured in the CPI. And in CPI, there'll be the energy price. You know, oil is back to almost $60 a barrel. So there'll be a point where we'll have year-over-year positive comparison for the energy pricing. But the supply chain, think about all the manufacturing disruptions worldwide. This is a big issue. I mean, even Apple's been talking about supply issues, iPads that you cannot get, they're out of stock. So this is ongoing. Car manufacturers seeing it with semiconductors that they cannot get. Transportation costs through the roof. If you're trying to get stuff out of China to go to Europe or the US, there's huge price inflation right now, but this is spot rate. And I think that at some point, normal life will prevail. And things will normalize again. So that's why I have a hard time to think that inflation will persist in a structural manner for the long term. I think that demographics, automation, as long as you don't see huge wage increases, I have a hard time to see long-term sustainable high inflation.
So I want to go back to the questions on energy, on oil, you know, and again, maybe there's sort of a transitory message in there. I don't know. It seems to be a new term we're using a lot, this transitory discussion. But there are questions rolling in on thoughts on energy, on oil. How do you look at this in the Canadian context? It's a big question mark right now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, as you know, I was invested and I've remained invested in some of these names, but I'm careful now because the commodity prices have gone up. Natural gas has come back a little bit. The weather has been colder than expected. So there's been a bit of money to be made. But to tell you the truth, though, it's been quite disappointing to look at the performance of the large Canadian energy names vis-a-vis their peers in other areas of the globe. And I think that they're still suffering funds that are still exiting the Canadian marketplace for fossil fuel type of investments. And unfortunately, I think it has played against some of these names, some in which we are invested. But the reality, if oil stays where it is in between $50 to $60, you don't need oil at $80 to print nice quarters with good free cash flow. And so I think, again, it's a transition, though. And as I said in the previous show, I don't think these companies will get the same multiples that they've seen in the past. So they might be more profitable, they might generate good cash flow, but unfortunately, we have to be realistic about it. But look, some of these names are up 50% since the bottom, and I think that oil, obviously, it's all on the Saudis and how OPEC will manage the situation, because demand will come back very gradually. But I think it's going to come back, and remember that these companies have not spent a lot over the past 5-10 years. And there could be at some point another spike in fossil fuel. But the question, will that be like tobacco? And people will not pay a big multiple on that.
Very interesting. Okay. So interesting to get some of the nuance in there.
And I think that, Pamela, one last thing on natural gas. Natural gas, though, is perceived as a part of the transition, the green transition. So that's why I think if you have a 5-year view or a 10-year view, I think natural gas gets more interesting. And at some point, if you see oil that starts to really decline, these shale producers in the US will stop production and there won't be residual gas part of that production of that well. So that might create at some point a very interesting context for the natural gas.
In Canada or everywhere?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, everywhere. Yeah.
Let's move to financials. The financials have done, they're part of the so-called vaccine trade or rotation or whatever you want to call it, but they've done very well. Canadian financials are seen as rock solid. How do you look at them for opportunities at this point?
Well, listen, the banks were definitely fortresses compared to 2008, 2009. So I'm very happy to see how they've been able to go through this crisis. But the reality is most governments have decided to take on the risk from this crisis. That's why we've seen all that liquidity being injected that represent for most governments like 20 to 25% of their economy. So it's massive. It's three times what was injected in 08, 09 during the great financial crisis. But the Canadian banks, they've been really good. Consumers continue to pay their mortgages. I'm a little bit more concerned about commercial real estate, but for most banks, it's not a huge exposure on their books. And you're getting a decent dividend yield. And to top it off, well, if you don't have huge losses, I mean, the net loss ratio, the NPLs, the provision, they're back to a reasonable level. I mean, and it never got close to where it was in 08, 09. So if the economy normalizes itself, I think we're in good shape to have decent returns. I mean, listen, might not be as exciting as what we see in some names in the industrials or technology or even some of these consumer goods type companies, but you could get decent returns. And now that you've got also the yield curve that is steepening a little bit, so that's going to be helpful also, especially for the Canadian banks that also have a presence in the U.S. because the steepening been a little bit more interesting in the U.S. than in Canada. So normally, and we've started to see this since the election in the U.S. and the announcement of the vaccines, like since it really going to lead us towards a normalization, I think that the financials also have recovered quite nicely and also on the back of long-term rates going up a little bit. So that's quite helpful.
I just want to talk a little bit about the approach to Canadian investors. I mean, you know, a lot of investors obviously sort of look at perhaps the Canadian markets and go at it from their own perspectives and so on. I mean, you've had this track record, Max, that's been so good through all these different periods that you're bringing up as comparisons and so on. Just sort of a thought for Canadian investors going forward. How do you sort of sum up? We're not finished yet. We have more questions. But how do you look at this moment for Canadian investors?
It's a bit of euphoria, right? Because at a social level, right, everybody's eager to go back out in the world and meet friends, family, relatives. Like, I mean, we've been deprived from having a normal life for so long. And also people open up their statements, they look at them and wow, they're more wealthy than just before COVID arrived. So I think it's kind of exhilarating. And then you see a lot of these small cap names or technology names that are reaching new high day after day. And sometimes you're scratching your head, what do I do here? And that's what we reassess everything we own on a daily basis. And our research team has done such a phenomenal job being on top of things. And we keep calling companies every day. I mean, we're working almost 7 days a week. And trust me, we read research and I see research that pop up in my mailbox at 11 p.m. sometimes. Like, I mean, we're really working hard and making sure that we own the best names and the companies that have really a durable business model that will continue. And think of the green transition is big. It's also about electrification. There are a lot of new names that will go public also in the next 12, 18 months. I've talked about all these new IPOs in Canada, which has been, it is very different from what we saw in the past 15 years. I mean, we saw a lot of mining or junk names that went public in 05 till 08 and then 2012 till 2018. But really now, to me, it's a bit like a renaissance. Like it really reminds me of 99, 2000 when you have all these new names. But the greatest thing out of this is that these new names have, most of them, very interesting and more resilient business models. So maybe they're overvalued right now when they go public, but I know that over the next 12, 24, 36 months, there'll be very interesting names to buy at some point if it's not already in the portfolio, because it really broadens the number of stocks that we'll be able to pick from. And I think for the Canadian investors, for the Canadian marketplace, to me, I find that very exciting. You know that I've always been underweight natural resources over my whole tenure as a diversified fund manager. And to me, to see these new names that are not necessarily related to resources, I find that really exciting.
So to ask you on resources then, how do you look at sort of the industrials as a sector? And there's a lot, you know, within that, taking part in the so-called green transition. And as you say, maybe some valuations are higher now, but as a longer term picture, how do you look at that sector and its involvement and its transitions that are going on?
Yeah. Well, listen, there's a whole supply chain, as you pointed out too. And, you know, you could be in a car manufacturer or a truck manufacturer, or you could be also in different parts of the supply chain. It could be at the service level. It could be also the rare earth material. I've not owned lithium stocks this time around. I kind of missed it. Some of these names have tripled or quadrupled since spring last year. But I've owned and I still own other types of rare earth material or other types of materials that could be included in batteries. And sometimes they're overvalued in the short term. But if you think, if you take a five-year view and you believe in EVs penetration out there, like it's going to happen. And therefore, if they're reasonable over 3-5 years in terms of valuation and can make a case out of it, and you believe in the management team, they've got a good balance sheet, well, therefore, sometimes you have to stomach the short-term valuation that could be a bit excessive, but you know that on a five-year view, you'll be rewarded and very handsomely sometimes. So you have to separate what is the noise, what are the fake companies or the companies that basically will not really make it. And sometimes we don't have an answer today. You see this as it evolves quarter after quarter, where we call in companies, when we watch the competition, like we might change our mindset on company XYZ. So there are plenty of different ways to play it. There's also the energy manufacturers, if you want. You know, when you look at the public utilities, you can think of Hydro One, Fortis, et cetera. Those were great names to own during the crisis, and they've really helped me to protect the shareholders' money in True North and the fund. But the reality, you have to own the renewable utilities or companies, the IPPs, independent producers, and those are the ones that went up quite a bit because this transition is going to last 10 to 20 years. The reality is that the penetration of solar energy and wind energy is just going to continue to grow at a very fast pace for the next 10, 15 years. So you see the governments are deploying the money, and I think it's a huge generational shift, and we're not going backwards. And I think that sometimes it could be overvalued in short term, but if you take a long-term view and choose the best operators, I think there'll be very interesting situations in that space.
We're going to leave it there. That's fabulous. So interesting to get your thoughts on that. Max Lemieux, thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again soon.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts, and don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again. See you next time.